Welcome to the Voice of Advocacy. I am Dr. Brick Lance. I am actually your new host for this podcast. I'm replacing Dr. Jeff Barrows. We're putting Jeff out to pasture. Actually, Jeff has done an outstanding job in leadership for CMDA, and blessings upon retirement. Jeff joins us today as we welcome Dr. Matthew Epinette. And Matthew Epinette is one of those non-medical smart doctors, and actually having taken a class from him, he's actually extremely smart doctor. He received his PhD in theology with concentration in Christian ethics and theology and culture from the Center for Advanced Theological Studies at Fuller Theological Seminary. And it's also where he earned his MA in theology. He is a 2004 graduate of the MA Bioethics Program at Trinity International University, where I am currently enrolled and also soon to finish. And again, had Matthew as one of my professors, outstanding professor. And he has an MBA with concentrations in quantitative analysis and information systems from Louisiana Tech University. His undergraduate degree is in business management and administration from Louisiana Tech University, Shreveport. He has co-wrote and co-produced 6 documentary films addressing bioethical issues, and he was awarded the best documentary at the California Independent Film Festival. He has numerous publications, too many to count, and one of my favorite is I enjoy reading World, and he's contributed to World Opinions. He and his lovely wife, Ginger, clearly his better half, live in Chicago. So Matthew is the executive director of the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity in Chicago. And that's one reason we wanted to have Matthew on this podcast, with CMDA's overlap with the CBHD. Welcome, Matthew.
Thanks so much for having me here. It's great to be with you guys.
So Matthew, you could just briefly tell us a little bit about your faith story. That'd be great.
I grew up as a preacher's kid, so we were in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. We were there often to turn on the lights and to turn off the lights, and I found that to be a really great childhood. So I was, you know, exposed to the faith from the earliest of days, and when I was in, kindergarten or first grade, somewhere in there, I came home from school, and I said, hey, this kid at my school, he got saved today. What does that mean? What's that about? And so my dad, you know, sat me down and we kind of talked it through, and I was like, yeah, I want to do that too. And so I prayed, and, you know, I believe that that's when I became a Christian, crossed the line of faith, as they say. And of course, as I got older, there came a time where I was like, well, did I know what I was doing when I was, you know, that young? Am I really saved? And so my dad sat down with me and we kind of talked it through, and I prayed again, and that led to being baptized and, you know, continuing just to grow in the faith. And yeah, it's just, I think it was a real blessing to grow up as a preacher's kid. My wife, Ginger, also a preacher's kid. So we have that in common. It was one of the things that sort of drew us together. And I know that that's not everyone's experience that grows up as a preacher's kid. You know, it's certainly not without its challenges here and there, but we both found it to be something that we're very grateful for as adults.
Well, Matthew, as Brick said in his introduction of you, you are the executive director for the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity at Trinity. And I know that many of our listeners may not be all that familiar with no doubt heard the term bioethics, but to really be able to define what bioethics is. So you seem to be the perfect person that can give us a really good definition of bioethics, and also how does that apply to the issue of human dignity?
Well, you know, probably one of the kind of more straightforward, simpler definitions of bioethics is these are just the questions of what we should and should not pursue when it comes to matters of life and health. Another way in which we might think about it, and this comes from Nigel Cameron, who was involved in the founding of the center, and this was in one of his first addresses at the CBHD conference. He says, all of the issues of bioethics address the questions of how we treat human beings in the specific context of the frailties of human life in the aftermath of the fall. And I really like that because it recognizes that we live in a broken world, that the things are not as they are supposed to be. And so we have technologies, we have therapies, we have all sorts of things that we can do to try and restore health. But should we do those things? That's where the questions really lie. One of the other questions I get is, what's the relationship between bioethics and medical ethics? And that's a great question. And I think medical ethics, and I'm going to generalize maybe a little bit here, maybe be a little bit narrow in what I'm saying, but medical ethics tends to what happens at the bedside, these sort of active clinical questions. And bioethics encompasses that, but it's larger, where we start talking about some of the more underlying philosophical, theological, metaphysical kinds of issues that go into those clinical encounter questions. So questions like, what is the nature of health? What does it mean to be healthy? What's normal? What do we count as normal functioning? Things like that, that obviously in very clear ways inform the questions that come up in the context of medical ethics, but that are somewhat broader and that maybe take us into more kind of theoretical, sometimes, discussions than what we would want to try and nuance or piece together in the context of, like, well, what are we going to do for this patient right now, right here? And so it's all about really trying to honor and uphold the human dignity of each and every individual person. How do we treat people rightly? What do we do that honors them, that cares well for them, that helps to, as much as possible, restore them to a normal state of health, or whatever that new normal is going to be, given the limitations of the situation in which they find themselves as a matter of their health?
Wonderful answer. Hey, I'm also a PK, and essentially my father, who was not only a PK, but a PhD, kind of like you, very smart, and it kind of got me interested in bioethics. But our listeners, you know, have different specialties. Of course, Jeff with us is OB-GYN, and we have some unique, or very specific, I should say, interest in different bioethical issues or topics. And I'm not going to speak for Jeff, but I imagine it's the beginning of life, because he gave birth to a whole lot of babies. Well, the women did, but he was there. But
yeah, let's be clear on that.
Do you have a special interest within, special topic or issue within bioethics that you're interested in?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a very curious person by nature. And so one of the things that I really love about leading the center is that I get to kind of research and speak into a whole broad range of topics. And every once in a while, a new topic will come up on my radar. Then I'm like, oh, I've got to do some more research on that. But in general, I mostly speak to beginning of life issues, end of life issues, and a few other things like that, trying to connect with people on issues that they're already somewhat familiar with. But my own area of research is really on the technology side. So I wrote my dissertation on transhumanism. You mentioned that my earlier degrees were in business with the side of numbers and things, but there was a whole underlying part of that that was also computer science. And so this whole bioethics thing is actually my second career. And in my first career, I was in IT. So I've always been interested in some of these technology questions, and specifically how we apply technology to the body. What are the goals of some of these technologies? So I'm doing a series right now on artificial intelligence that I'll be teaching in May as an online webinar cohort thing. But one of the really important things is, what are the goals of this technology? What is it that we're really trying to achieve here? And of course, that's always a question in medicine as well. What are we trying to achieve with this treatment? How likely are these outcomes? And are these outcomes the kind of outcomes we should be pursuing? And are these the means by which we're meant to pursue them? So I tend to be a little bit more of my own kind of personal interest on the side of technology side of things.
Well, as our listeners may know, here at CMDA, our advocacy work tends to focus on four vulnerable groups of people. And I've gone through this before on the podcast, but just once again, the first is preborn at the beginning of life. They are extremely and increasingly vulnerable with the changing laws in our country. The second group is young people and adolescents that are vulnerable to transgender ideology. The third group is those that are at the end of their life, approaching that end, and are vulnerable to being coerced or fooled into assisted suicide. And the last group, actually, I've often said, is our members, our conscientious healthcare professionals who increasingly are coming under attack. So those are the four major issues that we address here at CMDA, Matthew. So how do those line up with your work at CBHD? You mentioned you're interested in beginning and end of life, but what about the other two that we work with?
Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of work in all of those issues and all of those areas, particularly being associated with Trinity, being a part of Trinity, which is affiliated with the Evangelical Free denomination. I've actually done quite a bit of work on the gender issues because this impacts, of course, physicians, but it also impacts local churches, camp ministries, all sorts of things. And so I've given a number of talks through the Evangelical Free Church to their district superintendents, to pastors, and to lay people in just the sort of Sunday morning church context on the gender issues and how we understand, first of all, what's going on, what is it that people are asking for or demanding, and then how we as Christians respond, and then even some of the just very practical issues that somewhere like a sleepover camp or a youth ministry will need to consider in their response to those things. And then freedom of conscience, again, has been on our agenda quite a bit. The bioethics degree program has had a lot of physicians go through it. And so, you know, as you say, that's really where the rubber meets the road with them, to be able to continue to hold on to that in what unfortunately sometimes seems to be becoming a less and less liberal, if I can use that word in the sort of old-fashioned sense of a liberal society that really does allow for people to lean into their freedom of conscience. One of the other ways that has come up is we get, and I'm sure you at CMDA do as well, we occasionally get phone calls or emails from people who are in specific sticky situations where their conscience really is troubling them about something that they've been asked to do at work. And so to consult with them about how do we think through these conscience issues. And often it is, am I being too stubborn? Am I being wrong? And we really want to affirm that the conscience is sacrosanct and that people should be free to claim their freedom of conscience in whatever situation they find themselves and not be pushed into doing something. And then, of course, related to that are issues of moral distress that come up when someone either feels that they have done something that was out of step with their conscience or not been able to do something that they felt conscientiously they should be able to do. So these issues have really been a very vital part of the work that we've been doing here at the center.
Matthew, you had mentioned the denomination that Trinity is affiliated with, and I will just tell you as a student, I really enjoy when those students that are getting their Master's of Divinity are in the same class as I am in. I just admire and want to encourage those that go into a leadership role in the church, in ministry, as a pastor or minister. So I appreciate them. So that leads to my question. You touched on this a little bit, but there's a lot of overlap with bioethics and then teaching within the church, or maybe there needs to be more. So my question is, how can we engage the church more, what maybe you and Jeff and I would consider be important issues, important topics for the church to wrestle with, you know, to mm-hmm. discuss, to teach? So how can we encourage, and should we encourage the church to do more teaching or more engagement on bioethical issues?
Oh, we absolutely should. You know, one of the things that I find is true again and again is that if the church is silent on something, people think, well, that's just because the church doesn't have anything to say about it. And that's certainly not true. But I think one of the things that really has gotten out ahead of a lot of evangelicals, if I can speak kind of in those broad terms, are some of the reproductive technologies, because they really just haven't been addressed in the church, even in the terms of here are the things you need to consider. Now, we're not telling you what you should and shouldn't do, but here are some things that you really need to be thinking through if you're moving through an infertility journey, an infertility treatment plan. And so I think it's just vitally important for the churches to speak to this and for there to be, if the church isn't a resource, at least people within the church who can be a resource for couples or for families as they encounter these decisions in their lives. I was talking with a colleague here on campus not long ago, and they have a mother who's in a nursing home and she's having some very serious problems with dementia. And, you know, they're really facing some tough questions about what treatments they should and shouldn't pursue for her. And they want to honor her wishes. They want to care well for her, but they also don't want to burden her with a bunch of treatments that, you know, really aren't going to be helpful to her, but that might be very difficult for her. And so, you know, we need people in our churches that our members can turn to. And, you know, most churches in America, I would say, have at least one physician in them, sometimes more than that. And so I know that CMDA has an excellent curriculum that members can use to offer a short course in bioethics. I think this is great because it helps to put the issues on the radar of people in the church, and again, helps to identify this is someone in the church who has expertise in this area, who's given thought to these things that maybe I can turn to if these questions come up in my life. And then the other piece of it is you and I were chatting just before we went on the air here, is increasingly these issues are popping up in legislation. So here in Illinois, where I live, we have a bill that has just advanced to the full Senate that would legalize the practice of assisted suicide. And Illinois is one of 15 states this year where that's being considered. Last year, it was 24 states fully that were considering it, legislation like this. And so we want for people to be informed about what these laws mean and to be able to be active. I mean, this is CMDA advocacy, to be active in advocating for good laws and advocating against laws that are problematic and dangerous to people.
Matthew, tell us, or tell the members of CMDA, the resources at CBHD that are available and what's useful and how to access them. And along as you're answering that question about the summer conference that's coming up, I attended last year, thought it was fantastic, plan to attend this summer as well.
Yeah. So we have two main websites. Bioethics.com is bioethics news and information. So if you're just wanting to keep up with what's the latest items that have come up in the news that are related to bioethics, you head over to bioethics.com. We update that Monday through Friday with all the latest news stories there. And then our main kind of flagship website is cbhd.org. And we have probably one of the more accessible pieces that we have immediately is our intersections forum. And what we mean by intersections is the intersection of bioethics and church ministry. And so we really try and highlight, we have one article there every month that really tries to delve into some bioethics issue and how that relates to the church and how particularly those who are doing ministry in the church can think about, can navigate those issues within their congregation, bring them up to their congregations, that sort of thing. Then we have our Dignitas, which is a peer-reviewed publication, and that's freely available also on our website. And these are articles that are a bit more scholarly, but I think they're fairly broadly accessible. Our last issue went up a couple of months ago, and one of the articles in there was on C.S. Lewis and the work that he did in Abolition of Man and That Hideous Strength, which listeners may already know, but is basically two kind of versions of the same message. That Hideous Strength is a novel, and so bringing you into a topic through fiction. And then The Abolition of Man was originally a talk that he gave. But really trying to navigate this same space of the technologies, the questions about the technologies that we use and the ways in which we apply them to the human body and to the human person. And really raising questions about, again, what are the ends of that? What are the motivations of that? What are the goals of that? And are these appropriate things to pursue? So that's the kind of thing that would be in Dignitas. It also has book reviews occasionally, movie reviews occasionally, and a few other kinds of pieces. But, you know, really trying to dig a little bit more in depth into some of these bioethics questions and think about them from an explicitly Judeo-Christian point of view so that we're not just engaging sort of the philosophy or the ethics of it, but really getting into what does the Bible have to say about this? How do we think theologically about these issues?
And tell us about the summer conference.
Yes, the summer conference, living in the biotech century, the first 25 years, it's hard to believe it's already 2025. When we look back at the late 1990s, you know, there were all sorts of predictions about what were the 2000s going to bring. Well, here we are 25 years in. Let's talk about that. So we'll have Nigel Cameron, who I already mentioned. He was very influential in the starting of the center. He's just written a biography of Dr. C. Everett Koop, the Surgeon General. And so he'll be here on our opening night, on Thursday night, talking about exactly that, the sorts of predictions that were made and how those have kind of come to fruit. Brent Waters, who recently retired from Garrett Seminary here in the Chicago area, he's going to do our virtue ethics lecture, talking about where medicine went wrong. So I know your listeners might be particularly interested in that. Maureen Condick from Catholic University of America will be talking about, she's a hard research scientist. She'll be talking about some of the coming things that we're going to see, things like in vitro gametesis, and other things. Paul Dassow, who's the president of the American College of Family Medicine. This is a new group that has started up for family practice doctors who want to be thoughtful about the sanctity of life and other things that is not well represented in some of the other organizations. Ewan Goliger, who's a physician in Toronto, who's written a terrific book called How Should We Then Die? And if you know anything about the euthanasia regime in Canada, it's a very, very bold stance to take up there. And so he'll be talking to us because I just think that the increased push for assisted suicide, and I think we're going to unfortunately begin to see a push for euthanasia as well eventually. And then kind of an extra special thing that has come together all on its own in a way that I couldn't have put together myself. But several years ago, we had a group of Chinese-speaking physicians and academics who came through our MA bioethics program. They're in the process of setting up a bioethics center in Taiwan that will help to minister to Chinese-speaking areas of the world. And there'll be a whole group of those alumni who are with us and will give us a report on the good work that they're doing under the rubric of the Chinese Bioethics Initiative. And we'll have some other things planned as well. And as I think we'll talk about in just a moment, you know, it looks very much like this will be the final conference on the campus of Trinity International University. And so we'd love to have people come back and, you know, be with us here on the campus. Once again, we're looking for different venues. This is not the end of the conference, but it will be the end of our time here on the campus here in Deerfield.
Well, Matthew, on that note, I know you've been busy the last few weeks sending out a lot of emails because there's a lot of changes happening both at Trinity and at CBHD. So can you just, I know there's still probably a fair number of unknowns, but can you just kind of lay out for us what you do know about the future of Trinity and CBHD?
Yeah, so as we're recording this, just a couple of days ago, Trinity announced that they are entering into an agreement to become the seminary for Trinity Western University, which is a school, a Christian university that's located in outside of Vancouver, British Columbia. And so that is a major change. Everything will continue here on the Deerfield campus for next year, 25-26 academic year. But beyond that, everything with the Divinity School will be moving up to Canada. And I really applaud the administration for making this announcement early. I think it's good to get the word out. One of the things that that really affords is for us to be able to bring even more people on the discussion of the future of things. But the downside of that is it does leave a lot of unanswered open questions. And one of those is, where exactly will CBHD land? And I just don't know at this point. I'm having several conversations that have been very, very productive so far. I've just really been humbled and blown away by the supportive emails and phone calls and things that I've gotten over the last few days from people that are, you know, very interested in seeing the work of the center not just continue but flourish and land in a place that's very good. So, of course, one of the options would be for us to go to Canada with the Divinity School. Trinity also has a law school that's located out in Orange County, California. And so one of the options would be for us to go there. But I'm keeping all the options open at this point. I've had some very preliminary discussions with a couple of other universities about the possibility of maybe aligning with them. But I don't know. So I really appreciate your prayers as we go through this process, just for wisdom, for discernment, and for openness to think creatively. We've already been looking at venues for the 2026 conference, so I'm confident that that will happen, but where, I don't know exactly. But yeah, we just, you know, we really are trusting in the Lord right now that He knows where we're going to land, and He knows the path we need to take to get there. And so we're just trying to be obedient and do our part of due diligence and obedience, and then just spending time really in prayer and in Bible reading and just trying to reflect on, you know, what is it that God is leading us on to, wherever that may be as a center.
Well, Matthew, I know Jeff and I will promise to keep, particularly you and Ginger in our prayers, keep CBHD in our prayers, and keep Trinity in our prayers. A lot of us have close ties to all of you. And a big thank you to CBHD for what I would consider bringing truth and light to issues that are so relevant to living per God's design and glorifying Him in our communities. So CMDA greatly appreciates all the work you've done over the years. In light of that, I just want to close with a psalm that is very appropriate for our work in advocacy and that our advocacy team greatly appreciates within the scripture, and that's from Psalms 82, 3 and 4. It says, "Vindicate the weak and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and destitute. Rescue the weak and needy. Deliver them out of the hand of the wicked." So your work has helped us do that. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
And Matthew, I just want to add I've been reflecting the last few days about the difference that the bioethics degree I got at CBHD about 20 years ago now has made in my life. And it's impossible for me to measure completely. It's been a life changer for me. And so hearing about all of this with CBHD and Trinity, I will definitely be keeping you the center in my prayers. And I have to believe that the Lord has a plan because this is such a unique and amazing ministry that we just can't let it go by the wayside. So
yeah, thank you.
I will, as Brig mentioned, I will be praying.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Voice of Advocacy. If you would like to suggest a future guest or share a comment with us, please email advocacy@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share it on your favorite social media platform. This podcast has been a production of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.